Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to another podcast of the American Spaniel Club Archival Committee, where we explore our past and record it for the future. My name is Charlie Bourne, and I'm your host, and our guest today is Betty Campbell. Betty, good morning.
Good morning.
So Betty's good, thank you. Betty's based in New Jersey, and of course, as you all know, I'm in Nevada, and Betty has... I would think, of course, Betty, I know you for decades, but I would assume many people, particularly on the East Coast, know you well. And Betty has been involved in breeding Cocker since 1974. She's primarily a black and black and tan breeder, and she was a breeder primarily, but also with her husband Tom, she was a handler, well-known handler. And so we'll hear some of that story today as we talk with Betty, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Not a problem.
Happy and you got some puppies
it.
In the background?
Yeah.
And there's some puppies in the background. And they're
hopefully
party color puppies.
Too loud. Yes. The last of my line, I hope.
Okay, well, you know, I think it's always, let's just sort of dive in, and the best place to start is from the beginning. So tell us, when did you become interested in Cocker Spaniels?
There was always a Cocker Spaniel in my family. And, you know, they were obviously the 1940s, 1950s looking Cockers, but they were our Penny. Everyone was named Penny. And after I was married and had three children to my first husband, I was kind of in the doldrums, and it was decided it might pick me up to get a Cocker puppy. So that was ours, not my other family's. So we went to the Ohio State Fair and met. They have a place there called the Dog House, and or used to. And the top breeders in Central Ohio and Northern Ohio would be there. It was like a breeder showcase.
Oh.
And I saw this little black and tan puppy bitch. And Eunice Reed had it. Her kennel name was FIFO. And she was primarily a party color breeder, but here was this little black and tan that we ended up buying as the family pet, so to speak. Excuse me. Shortly thereafter, we were transferred from Columbus to Dayton, much to my dismay, because I loved Columbus. But anyway, in going there and looking for a groomer, or someone that could help me with a cocker, I was introduced to Bud and Ida Hampshire. They became, especially Ida, and that was Shiloh Dell, they became my mentor. And let me tell you, Ida was a taskmaster. To this day, I remember how I was supposed to lay papers in an X-Pen or in a run. It had to be done a certain way. And she helped me with grooming and going to classes to learn how to handle. But her husband would not let me show the puppy, the black and tan puppy I bought, because she had a bar of tan across her nose. And that, in the standard, was a very strong no-no. And Bud was a judge, and so he said, no, you can't show Muffin, which was her name. So we ended up instead breeding her to the Shiloh Dell Dandy dog, champion dog that Lynn White had finished. And in that litter, there was a black and tan male that ended up being my first homebred champion. So for my first litter, I got my first homebred champion that Mike and Darlene Gurman bought and had finished. From there, I ended up with Bud and Ida again as mentors, and Carl Oldham, Maindale. And I ended up with a 10-month-old black bitch who became my first, became a champion, but I met Tom Campbell and was introduced actually to all of the handlers at the Sterling Show in Lexington, Kentucky, back in the day when it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And of all the handlers, we, and then ex-husband and me, we picked Tom to be our handler. So he took that bitch and finished her for me. She was bred to Laura's champion, Kapler's Royal Cavalier, and produced 6 champions in one litter for me. And at that time, Tom would take some and show whichever ones he wanted, and I would take the rest and show them out in my area. So that's how we finished 6 in the one litter. And then it just went on from there. I would breed and keep Actually, not so much keep puppies as I would place them. If they matured nicely, they would come back and I would show them on my own. And again, Tom, if I bred something, Tom would pick the one he wanted and he would take that one to show. So I had them going in both directions. Then when we moved to New Jersey, I did travel with Tom a bit back then, but primarily he was just showing my dogs for me. And I was busy at home with four children, so I didn't get to go that much. But as time went on, then I became, quote, the assistant to Tom Campbell. And not too many years later, I became the wife of. So it was a long, drawn-out story, but that's where it all started.
So you had some outstanding mentors, because Shiloh Dell, you know, people should look them up, but they had so many famous, you know, black cockers. And I do remember Ida being a taskmaster and Bud being very easygoing. And then Mandale, the old hums, Mandale's Mr. Success, was that their big dog?
That was their big dog, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they're behind, I mean, now they're way behind, but that was really, those were two very, very famous breeders. That if you take a look at past winners at the Spaniel Club, I know you'll find their names there. So they were
absolutely
really big. Yeah. And both, I think, wasn't Mr. Oldham a judge as well?
No. He was.
Oh, that was Clark.
That
was Clark.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So he great. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, he stayed pretty much a breeder, a very difficult judge of his own dogs. I mean, he did not take structure lightly. I mean, so I had Ida being the taskmaster on everything else and Dr. Oldham being the taskmaster on the structure of the dog. So it was a good group to be with.
Oops, I just lost you a little bit there on the mobile phone.
Oh,
but
I'm sorry.
I think we're good. You back?
Okay. I'm back, yes. Can you hear me?
So, yep, I hear you, good. So you really, you know, I usually ask, you know, who nurtured you and guided that interest, but you've really gone through some of your mentors. So, you know, moving on, so looking back, with what you know now, what do you wish you had known then when you started back in the 70s?
You know, I honestly can't think of anything that would make a difference other than, of course, the health issues that we now know so much more about. But trying to just study pedigrees, study getting stud cards and putting together pedigrees, knowing the breeders or the dogs behind what I was breeding, because I always found you bred to the father, not to the young dog. And, you know, that is what I wish I would have even known more about, was the studying and the pedigrees. I mean, I've had people say to me when they're talking about different breeders, and they'll go, well, who are they? What would they know? And I thought, pay attention to your history. So I would have liked to have met a lot more of the old timers than I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, you met two great ones for sure, so you were lucky in
absolutely.
That regard. You know, sometimes people live in areas where there aren't very many other breeders, particularly today, you know. And that Ohio show where they had the breeder forum, that's something very nice that doesn't happen very often these days either, you know. So.
No. And, I mean, I'm sorry to say, and I guess that comes down later in our conversation, but I am so sorry to say that these younger people, or the newbies as we call them, don't take the time. They just want the big winner, and that's who they're going to breed to, and they never take the time to go back and look at old. Ida made me make a 13-generation picture pedigree of the bitch I got, and it was not hard. I mean, you had Cocker's Calling, the leader, you had Mary Doty's magazine with a lot of pictures in it, but there also were boxes of stud cards that Ida gave me. And you could look at those and go back into the 40s and see old dogs, you know, see what they looked like, what their pedigree was. And now I guess you could do that online, but back then you couldn't. There was no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be my wish for what I wish for today, is that people would pay more attention to the history and the pedigrees, and not just to the not just to the winners.
So, you know, two things. One, you mentioned stud cards, and I think that's kind of an interesting piece of history. Long before we had the internet, if you had a stud dog, you would get stud cards printed, and they could be very fancy. They could be four-sided. I have 100 of them probably from all kind of old dogs going back to the 30s. And it was how you advertised your dog. You would mail out a stud card if somebody wanted to know about them or something. And they're invaluable now because they're fascinating. I have some that have, you know, notes on them that people wrote notes on or whatever. you know, it's kind of interesting. Now we have the internet, which is probably a far more efficient way to do it. But the stud cards is something that passed. I think by the time you got in 74, there weren't very many dogs with stud cards, were they?
No, there weren't many at all. You had to rely on, you know, like people like Ida Hampshire gave me a cigar box.
Yeah. I do have a stud guard on Action, which would be a 70s or 80s dog. R2 Action, you know, the one that Bill Ernst had.
Which is I think Ruthie may have continued that for a while, if the Ben Hoffs.
Yeah. It's an interesting point of history that hadn't been, you know, brought up. So I thought for people that were listening, would be kind of interesting to talk about. And you did start to get into my next question is, you know, the dog show world in 74 versus 2018 is a totally different world. Talked about that. And if you were, and before we started this recording, we were talking about that. But what do you advise people who are now trying to begin in Cockers? What's your advice to those that are listening here?
Well, besides the research on their dogs, I want them to talk to breeders, and not just in the sense of I'm going to buy a dog from you or I'm going to breed to your dog. Talk to them. Find one, and it's probably only going to be one that's willing to talk to you, be available for you with your dumb questions or your smart questions, and guide you. And that what Tom used to always say, that he felt the handlers were the the people that you needed to go to for information, that they were able to tell you and advise you. If you couldn't find a mentor, a good handler would be able to talk to you on their day off as a rule, not at a show. And, you know, find somebody that will guide you and not just jerk you around, excuse my expression, because that's what I'm seeing so much right now. Nobody will talk to these newbies and let them know what they should be doing, how they should be doing it, that type of thing. And everybody thinks their dogs are the best. Well, I'm sorry. All our geese aren't swans. You know, and I'm not saying every dog that finishes deserves to finish either. With all the shows now, anybody can finish.
Yeah.
And that's not the criteria that it should be. You look at the quality, excuse me, at Spaniel Club. And the years where there used to be 48, 6 to 9 Ascot dogs, let alone, I mean, you're lucky if you have 48 Ascots now, and that's because so many breeders are gone. But the other side of that is people only brought the good dogs. There was a string that went to Spaniel Club, and then you came home, set them down, and you took other dogs and maybe some of those to Florida for the circuits or to other shows. But the quality in Cockers is so gone downhill right now that if a good one comes along, I want to yell and scream, yay, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you talk about that. You just jog my memory. There were dogs you sent to the Spaniel Club, and then if you had a string, there were dogs that you held back and took to other shows, but you only brought certain dogs. And so the question always was, well, I have a dog. Is it good enough to go to the Spaniel Club? Not, will you take it to the Spaniel Club? Is it good enough? Yep.
They may have taken offense when you said no, but they knew that you were only going to be bringing the quality dogs, the best of the best, so to speak.
Yeah, that is true. I Talk about large classes. I remember during the Futurity back in St. Louis many years ago, probably in the late 90s, and I had 46 6 to 9 black bitches. 46 mm-hmm. in one class. That just never will happen again. And
no.
You know,
those days are gone. And amazing. In some respects, that's, I guess it's good, but on the other hand, no, because if you have 10, 6 of them probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Well, good advice. Good advice. So among all, you know, since 74, you've done a lot, achieved a lot. And, you know, so I call them accomplishments because I don't want to dictate that it has to be a win or what it has to be. But of all the accomplishments that you've had in your time breeding and showing Cockers, what's the most significant thing to you, or if there's one or two of them, and then tell me more about them.
Okay, the one that I am probably the most proud of is we now have fourth generation coming back to buy puppies from us. That they've had, they bought, their children bought, now they're buying them for their grandchildren.
Oh.
And, you know, to me, that means a lot when people are coming back, and we don't advertise, you know, so they're coming back and back for another Bellburn or Pagel Cocker. And that's just, to me, that's an accomplishment that you can say they live long, full lives, their owners love them, they have the outgoing disposition that the Cocker should have. So that's my biggest accomplishment. Yes, I won at Westminster. We've won at Spaniel Club, but, you know, not best at Spaniel Club. Tom did. I didn't. But, you know, the wins don't mean anything. It's the quality of the dogs and the people you're selling them to that means the most to me, that they appreciate their babies, their companions, because I will not say they're pets.
Yeah, it's very heartwarming, isn't it? I can imagine to have people come back and who love their dog and loved it so much they want to get it another one from you through the generations. That must be quite something.
It is. It's very, very satisfying. And now I'm seeing a lot of my party color puppies, excuse me, that I never planned to have, that are doing great work in agility and performance events. And I know they're good. I know they're smart. I just can't do it, and I don't mean physically. I cannot mentally do that, but we've had so many that over the years have accomplished great feats, you know, mock and all kinds of things that I don't understand that they have done with their owners. And that means a lot, you know. They're not only good quality-wise and happy, but they're structurally good, which agility demands.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Yeah, agility and feel do, yes. I mean, you know, form follows function, as the famous video I think we have at the Spaniel Club says.
Right.
Know. So there's a reason for all that. So talking about achievements, I think that's a great one. We need to always remember that at the end of the day, we're raising family companions, and, you know, so we need to remember that. And I think it helps with the reputation of the Cocker Spaniel, too, which still is somewhat tarnished in some circles. And so I think, you know, the more good Cockers that are out there.
A lot of the veterinarians are just absolutely hate to see a Cocker walk in the door. And it makes me proud when my vet says, oh, here, come over here, meet this dog. And it'll be one of our puppies that's grown up. It might be 8 or 10 years old. And he wants the people to see what a Cocker should be like, not the fear biters and the wetters and all that that can happen.
Is that still the case, Betty, even today? Is that still the reputation Cockers have with veterinarians?
With a lot of veterinarians, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We have a practice here that used to be our primary practice that now probably has 20 vets in it. And of those 20, you probably have a handful that know what a decent Cocker is like. Otherwise, they want to muzzle them the minute mm-hmm. they walk in the door. And that's sad.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that the socialization and the proper breeding, but also the socialization means so much. Because, you know, you can have a litter of 6, and maybe you're going to have one for show, maybe not even one. The rest are going to be family companions.
I have to say, I used to judge how they... you couldn't buy a puppy till you came two or three times, and I needed to see the family and see the children. And if the children were unruly and misbehaved, I figured they couldn't train a dog.
Well, going back to the very beginning, when I ended up getting the black bitch from Bud and Ida, mm-hmm. that was 10 months old that Tom finished, my first actual real show bitch, and Bud wasn't going to sell it to me because I had three children. Now, I had known them any number of years, and they knew my children. They, you know, they called them Aunt Ida and Uncle Bud, the whole thing. But he took a lot of convincing to let me buy Fancy, and, you know, that she was going into a home that had kids that knew how to handle a dog and behave. So, yeah, I agree with you. If the children are unruly, I say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have a puppy for you.
Yeah. So, listen, my next question is kind of like, I always preface it by saying, well, mothers love all their children equally, but there's always a few that generally could be favorites. So of all the dogs that you've had, are there any that are especially memorable for you?
I've had two that sounds strange of all the puppies I've had, but I had one that was Champion Bellbird's Bold and Brassy, and Tom finished her, won groups with her, won specialties with her, and she just was an extraordinary dog. At the time, I had no kennel. When she came home, she was in the house with her mother and her sisters that I had finished. And I loved Muffin, not Muffin, Buttons, excuse me, but she produced Champion Bellburn's Barrister. And Buster, you could pick a puppy that Buster was the sire of. Walking down the street, he was just so dominant in what he produced. And Tom wouldn't let me show him, so I gave him to Cliff Steele. And Tom talked very kindly to Clifford and said, don't bring this dog around any shows we're going to be at. And, you know, Cliffy said, why? And Tom said, because I'm running with a string of blacks, and it would not look good if Betty's bred dog beat my client's dogs. Buster ended up being actually the last of my own dogs that were campaigned because of that. We could not compete with clients' dogs.
Yeah.
So we could compete with him. That was the problem. But that dog, to the day he passed away, developed lymphoma very suddenly. But to the day he passed away, he was the most sweet, loving, adorable dog. Matter of fact, my daughter was quite ill, and he laid beside her. The whole time she was ill. She was ill for a year. And Buster stayed right with her and, you know, just was a joy. So, you know, those are the two. And one was mother and son. And, you know, you just can't get that all the time.
Yeah. Barrister? Who was the sire of Barrister?
It was a black and tan of Alma De Beers. God, I can remember his registered name.
Sorry.
I can't. Yeah.
I remember Barrister. I remember the dog Barrister. But I'm trying to picture who the sire was. I don't remember. But anyway.
Yeah. It was a black and tan, a big kind of clunky dog, but you know, it wasn't the Derbet dog. I can't remember. Anyway, I'm sorry. That one I didn't get far enough, I had to think of that one.
Sorry.
I could have pulled his papers and looked at that.
Sorry I asked that question.
No, I know. Now get off the phone and I'll be calling you back in half an hour with that name. Oh,
so for those that are listening, Betty and I were talking about the fact that you forget dogs' names, and it's kind of not even a sign of age, it's just what happens. You know, you can't think of the dog's name, and people ask you something, and you go, what was their registered name? And I think every breeder that I've done one of these podcasts with has had that issue. So I don't feel so bad when I get pictures out, and I didn't write the name of the darn dog on the back of the picture, and now I don't know who the hell it is.
Believe me, I know. That, you know, God bless her, Alma De Beer never bred anything, but she owns one of the top dogs, including the Royal Cavalier, the Capless Royal Cavalier dog, and many other party colors included. She would buy them and finish them and love them their whole life. But she wrote everything on the back of every picture, even down to the leader, if there was an ad in there or if there was a picture, a win picture at a show like they used to do. And she would write in there, okay, this is Timmy, this is Joey, you know. And we knew who was who, but on the back of the picture she wrote their registered names, and God bless her for that, because I wouldn't remember them now, just like this one.
She wrote, when we bred to Royal Cavalier, she wrote a thank you note to us for breeding to him. And then she wanted us to tell her when the litter came and what was in the litter, so I wrote back and told her. And then she sent me a note and said she wanted pictures, so I sent her pictures, and she followed them when they were at the show or whatever. She was so involved with her dogs, so involved.
Oh, it was very sweet. Very much so. And she was a great note writer, and she would always write a little notes to the judges. If they put them up, yes. If they didn't, she would say, thank you for the consideration. Mm. You know, I guess it was a different era when she wrote notes.
She was the era of my aunt, so, you know, that was before the internet and whatever. So, talking about people, we talked about dogs, then we start talking about people. So, are there some people that were especially memorable for you in your career thus far that you'd like to talk about?
Basically, you know, I go back again to Bud Nida and to Dr. Oldham and to Mike and Darlene Gurman out in Ohio, who have been great friends all these years.
And, Betty, the Gurman's kennel name was?
New Dawn.
Okay, New Dawn.
Yeah. And they, you know, they finished a lot of dogs on their own. They then went into Schnauzers and got out of Cockers. So, which her and I are still, I just got back from seeing her a couple times this summer. And I love them dearly. You know, you talk about those that are true friends. Judy Sarkissian, who her kennel name is Kissians, and has had some very nice wins. But I didn't realize she went back more years with Tom than I did. I mean, he handled for her. He helped her pick out puppies. And she has remained a tried and true friend. I couldn't ask for not just a client. She is a friend. And she's always there if I need her. God bless her. And if I don't need her, she's there sometimes. But, you know, that's the newer generation of people. I've met so many nice people through the dogs recently, but they're not the old friends. You know, you talk about the people that just bought a puppy today. Rita Crow advised them to come to me for a puppy. And I mean, that's years going back when I lived in Ohio and knew Rita and the whole Southern Ohio club, the whole thing. So, you know, and of course, Kim Vavilo, I don't know what I'd do without her. Grumpy as she can be. That can go on.
Yes, but I always thank Kim, because, as you know, Betty, when Kim says she's going to go do something, she does it. So you can always count on her.
Even if she's doing 10 things at once,
she'll do the 11.
Not that she won't complain about it, but she'll do it.
But you can always count on her. When I was president, I could always count on whatever Kim was doing, it would get done.
Absolutely, and she's still that way.
Yeah. You were show chairman then in those years. So
I love those years. I enjoyed that tremendously.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. I always enjoyed. Enjoyed time, you know, with Tom. Anybody that knows Tom knows he always knew where the best restaurants were.
Oh, absolutely. And God help him. You know, people have the navigators and things now, but he knew how to get there by the Crooked Tree. Or wine barrel on the corner, you know, and all of the handlers, Peter Green, different ones. We would all end up at the same restaurant, not knowing, because we knew the guys knew where the good food was, usually inexpensive, but good. And rely on Thomas to direct you to a good restaurant.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we've talked about dogs and people, and so are there any shows in particular or events that happened in your time with dogs that are particularly memorable? And if so, share them with us.
Absolutely. The first one would be probably Northern Ohio Cocker Spaniel Club that I used to belong to, but Tom came in with my 6 to 9 puppy dog and won a major on him there. Any of the shows in Ohio, I mean, obviously Ravenna and Western Reserve, the shows that are no more were great. Westminster was always up there. You know, thank God I remember the old days at Westminster and what it was like, and not the new venues and everything. And to have a win there was just amazing. I loved it. I remember winning the variety with one of our buff dogs and just totally loved every second of it. Spaniel Club, what can I tell you? It will always be the American Spaniel Club, not to be outdone by any other. And, you know, the National is wonderful, but there's nothing like the American Spaniel Club. That's about it. I mean, obviously our little Southern New Jersey Cocker Spaniel Club, and win, lose, or draw, that's always a fun show. So, and
yeah, you're chugging right along. You're doing very well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So other than that, those are the, I know I'll think of something otherwise, but oh, the Sterling Show in Kentucky in the old days.
Oh.
There was nothing that matched that. And you had to be there.
Yeah, with the evening party at Charlie and John's, always.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the food. And I remember sleeping on a chair because we weren't going to get done with judging until 11:30 at night. But we all hung in there and stayed and finished up the judging times.
Yeah, those entries ran into over 200, 250, I remember. So it was,
yeah,
it was a big show.
I think that one year that we ran so long, Calvin was judging. Calvin Ward was judging. But Mary Doty judged one year, did sweepstakes at the time. And, you know, those are shows that are never, Maryland Cocker Spaniel Club, it's never going to be the same without Art and Ruth Benhoff. You know, Ruthie advised me against marrying Tom. God bless her, she was a riot. You had to know her. And that woman blind could pick a dog out better, you know, going over it, better than a lot of sighted people.
Yeah.
After she lost her vision, you still wanted her to go over your puppies.
Oh, touch was awesome, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are the days that are unfortunately long gone, and the people that are long gone. And Art with his little, he would always have his little bottle of 7-Up to partake of at the end of the show.
Yeah, Bonnie Pike often talks about that.
Oh, yeah. And he was willing to share it up to a point.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, the show was over and the little 7-Up bottle came out.
That's right. Now, the Maryland show back then used to have a cocktail party.
Yeah, they did. They
and
did.
And then it was held at the Boys Detention Center or something.
For a while, it was a detention center for delinquent boys, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, I have forgotten to mention her, but one of the ladies I miss so to this day is my Annette Davies, who
Wow. People
didn't know her that well, but she was extraordinary. And, again, a friend, a confidant, she was totally amazing. And, you know, she died the month before Tom after a car accident, and it just about did both of us in. Because Nepsy was a very special lady.
Yeah, she's in the Hall of Fame. She's in the Hall of Fame, so if anybody doesn't know her, I forget what year she was nominated, but it'll be in the Hall of Fame under the Historical Archive section of the Spaniel Club. So.
Yeah, Fine Line Cockers. And
yep.
I'll never forget her one year that she judged Best in Show at American Spaniel Club with her very fancy formal on.
Mm.
And, you know, Annette always did it up to the nines.
Yes, so. I remember that was a stunning outfit. I think that might be a picture we have on the website. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I didn't realize that she had died within a month or so of Tom.
Yeah,
I didn't remember.
Because I had gone, this was off subject, but I had gone out to buy her a portable DVD player while she was in the hospital because she loved to watch movies after her car accident. and I walked back in the door, and Tom was just, something was wrong. I didn't know what. And he had to tell me Annette had passed away. Mm. So she died, I believe, on the 31st of December, and he died on the 14th of January.
Well, thank you for sharing some of those people. Those are some names that, you know, people may not know or may know. Certainly, I guess I've been around long enough, I know all those people, too. So.
Yeah, you know them all. Yeah, you know, like somebody will go, who's the Benhoffs? I go, oh, my God.
know? Yeah, I know all those people. But then I started when I was 13. I was just a mere baby, so I'm still
you
young.
You were just I thought you were younger than that, Charles.
Yeah, right.
Because I've known you forever, so.
Yeah, I know. That's why it was interesting to hear the timeline, because I graduated from college in 73, and you started in 74. So there was those first couple of years I probably didn't know you, but I do remember you being around forever. So, but, you know, forever is, you know, at this point, that's still decades. So,
yeah,
so looking, yeah, so we've been reminiscing here. We probably should wrap this up. So is there anything more that you'd like me, that you'd like to share with our listeners that we haven't talked about? You've shared so much about, you know, your thoughts about how to get started, how to breed, and what made you successful, and people that influenced you, and told stories about some of them, which has been fascinating. Is there something else that we haven't covered that you'd like to take the time to do now?
No, I just thank Spaniel Club for doing this. Not that I'm that important, but we've lost so many of the older breeders that had so much to offer, and either in death or in Alzheimer's. And so it's good to have these podcasts or whatever they're called, archives, so people can kind of get an idea of what a stubborn, miserable old-timers are like and what we went through.
Well, that's our goal. We have a long list of people we're trying to get to, and so we thank you so much for being part of this, and we hope that people gain from this and enjoy listening to them and, you know, have a drink like we used to do and sit around and tell story, as the Hawaiians put it. I think it's always fun. Yeah, always fun.
Yeah. All right, so Betty, one thing I'll add, I do miss, and that is when we all would go out to dinner after a show and sit and talk, you know, and be friends. And it's not that way anymore. So people get together, meet your friends, don't get into little cliques, just be in love with your breed and be good.
Well, I think that's an important thing that just came up with, I just did an interview with Laura and it came up, and that is the friendships last a lifetime that you gain in dogs. The wins are fleeting, you know, and if all you do is, I think you said early in the conversation, is to go for the win and then go home, you're missing the best part, you know, because Tom was, you know, a tough competitor in the ring.
Yes.
But, you know, as I talked to you offline, he was a good friend, and we certainly went out to dinner all the time and enjoyed each other's company, and that's the way it should be, you know.
You know, not that you don't have to go to a fancy restaurant. You can do a potluck, but people sit around and talk.
Yeah, we never did fancy restaurants.
No.
We never did. Well, thank you so much, Betty. If you would just hang on a moment, I'm going to sign off here, and then I'll just talk to you offline. But I want to thank you again for doing this, and everybody that's you're listening to this podcast on the American Spaniel Club site, and there will be other podcasts that are up there as well, and encourage you to listen to them. They run about 30 minutes each, and we'll be adding them over the next couple of years, we hope. And thank you again, Betty, very much.
Thank you, Charles.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.